Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand and Anne Ball. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
Britain is facing the most difficult and perhaps important period in its modern history. The British electorate is divided. The voting this week will have a major effect on the country and economic future. But it appears the election results will do little to end political divisions that could extend into the next generation. During the 20th century, Britain fought alongside and against Europeans. The peace that followed World War II helped make the British economy grow strong and many of its citizens wealthy. This election will decide whether Britain's relationship with the European Union ends or continues. During World War II, Britain faced years of punishing conflict, German bombing raids, and self-sacrifice. When the fighting ended in 1945, many British voters were ready for change. After Victory in Europe Day, voters rejected wartime leader Winston Churchill and his Conservative Party. They instead elected Labour Party candidates who had promised to rebuild the economy. In the nearly 75 years since then, there have been other big votes in 1964, in 1979, 1997, and 2010. This Thursday, the Brexit election will shape the country's future. Politicians and reporters use the term Brexit when talking about Britain's decision to exit or withdraw from the EU. Churchill came to symbolize Britain in its war years. His fighting spirit and the famous victory sign are world famous. Yet that had little effect on voters in 1945. They were tired of war and everyday shortages. Those voters provided the biggest election swing in the country's history. No elections had been held since 1935. Churchill's Conservative Party had led a national government during the war. It was removed from power by the Labour Party under Clement Attlee. Labour candidates won an economic program that observers likened to the 1930s New Deal in the United States under President Franklin Roosevelt. In Britain, the National Health Service and welfare state came into being. The goal was full employment with social reform. These programs lasted until after Conservative Margaret Thatcher took power in 1979. In the early 1960s, the Conservative government began to experience problems. The country still faced economic problems, and the old party establishment could not keep up with social changes. Finally, party members were linked to the Profumo affair, a sex scandal that had threatened national security. Voters wanted change. Labour's Harold Wilson, an economist, seemed to represent the end of the class structure that had governed much of life in Britain. He had moved up in life from a small northern town to the job of prime minister. During the 1960s, Britain was known for pop culture, especially its rock and roll music. The Beatles were the country's greatest export. But Wilson had to fix the still broken economy. He devalued the pound, British money, when government debt became too big. Wilson also faced plots to throw out his leadership, both in the 1960s and again when he served as prime minister in the 1970s. The winter of discontent is a term used to describe a time in the late 1970s when British trade unions launched a series of nationwide strikes. This opened up the leadership to a new kind of prime minister, Margaret Thatcher. Her years would lead to sharp divisions in the country. Thatcher was known as the Iron Lady. Britain's right-wing press fully supported her government. Thatcher saw the unions as the enemy and wanted them destroyed. Under her leadership, Britain fought a war with Argentina over the Falkland Islands and won. Parts of British society profited under Thatcher during the 1980s. But then unemployment and poverty worsened, especially in the north of the country, where long-established industries, like mining, were destroyed. Thatcher won 3 consecutive elections, but was removed from her own party over her opposition to strengthening Britain's partnership with the EU. After 18 years of conservative power, Tony Blair won over many voters in 1997 with a promise of a fresh start. Blair brought in a centrist government that was friendly to businessmen. No longer would the Labour Party be a home for extreme politics. It would also work to bring its country into the EU. At first, Blair declared his most important goal was education, education, and education. But military interventions followed in the war between Kosovo and Serbia and in Sierra Leone in 1999 and 2000. After the 2001 attacks against the United States, Blair decided his country should stand shoulder to shoulder with the U.S. government. He followed President George W. Bush into wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. London was then targeted in deadly terror attacks in 2005. After 10 years, Blair stepped down as prime minister, with the job going to Gordon Brown. Brown led the country during the global financial crisis in 2008 and the economic weakness that followed. The Associated Press notes that his leadership was less appealing to voters than Blair's. In 2010, Brown faced a young David Cameron on Election Day. Cameron attempted to make conservatives appear more caring than in years past. Now British Conservative Party leader Boris Johnson and Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn are about to show that politics in Britain are about one thing, Brexit, and no one knows how it will turn out. I'm Susan Shand.
International flags hang outside Valencia Newcomer School in Phoenix, Arizona. The school offers programs for more than 200 children from around the world. They are learning English skills and classroom customs that they need to succeed in the United States. When each school year begins, the refugee and immigrant children often do not know some rules. Some children get frightened by a whistle or an aircraft flying above. Such sounds might remind them of conflict back in their homeland. But the young students' fears disappear over time, says Valencia principal Lynette Faulkner. She calls the school the children's safe place. Soon, the students learn to stand in line and raise their hands. As they learn English, they make friends across cultures.
Since the autumn of 2018, the public school has welcomed students from countries including Myanmar, Eritrea, Indonesia, Afghanistan, and Cuba. The boys and girls get an extra year of attention at Valencia before moving on to more traditional schools. The students come from 21 nations and speak 15 languages. Valencia is among a few U.S. public schools helping some of the thousands of refugee children who arrive in the country each year. The schools are not necessarily in cities with more refugees. Instead, they are in areas where local education officials took steps to create them. Similar schools are in Texas, Indiana, Rhode Island, and North Carolina.
The administration of President Donald Trump has proposed limiting the number of refugees admitted each year to 18,000. The current number is 30,000. It is already much lower than the refugee limit during the presidency of Barack Obama. Arizona ranks 8th among the 50 states for refugee resettlement. Its numbers dropped sharply from 4,110 people in fiscal year 2016 to 998 people in 2018. But it did rise to 1,216 for the 12-month period that ended on September 30th. About half are children. There may be less, but they're still coming, said Christine Jones, a teacher at the Valencia Newcomer School. It is unclear if the lower limit on refugees will affect the financial support schools get from the Office of Refugee Resettlement's Refugee School Impact Program. In 2018, the Arizona Department of Economic Security gave out about $635,000 to help 1,026 school-age refugees across the state. The money was used to get those students things like school supplies and language interpreters. 10-year-old Rebecca Kawa is the daughter of Congolese refugees. She did not learn English at the refugee camp in Uganda, where she was born. But after only 2 months as a student at Valencia, she no longer needed an interpreter. Kawa said, "I like this school because they teach you English and you learn it fast."
There are often difficulties for children who lived in refugee camps or witnessed violence. Refugee and other immigrant children who lose a home or parent can suffer from what child development experts call toxic stress. They use this term to describe the body's reaction to long-term difficulties, said Sarah Smith. She is Senior Director of Education for the nonprofit International Rescue Committee. Infants might cry for long periods of time, Smith said. Children in school might have a hard time concentrating. Newcomer school teachers and social workers aim to make sure children get the social and emotional time they need to talk through feelings and make friends. Valencia social worker Michelle Frias said that over the past year, she has referred about 10 students to mental health specialists for extra care. At Valencia, the day starts with teachers welcoming students as they get off the buses. Samuel Lavi, a teaching assistant from Congo, is the first to welcome each student. My most important role is to make sure the students get what they're supposed to get, he said. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In 1863, Union forces defeated Confederate forces in the bloodiest battle of the American Civil War, the Battle of Gettysburg. Soon after that, the Union won another important victory, seizing Vicksburg, Mississippi. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue our story of the Civil War with the Battle of Vicksburg.
In November 1863, President Lincoln traveled to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. He spoke at the opening of a military cemetery. He felt very tired by the time he got back to Washington. Doctors thought he had a cold. Later, they said he had a weak form of smallpox. The president remained in bed. Few visitors could see him. There was a danger the smallpox could spread. Lincoln got better after a few weeks. He began working on his yearly message to Congress. After 2.5 years of war, he had good news to report. Union armies had gained 2 important victories at about the same time.
One was the Battle of Gettysburg. Union forces, led by General George Meade, had defeated Confederate forces, led by General Robert E. Lee. They pushed Lee back into Virginia. It was the last Confederate invasion of the North. The day after the Battle of Gettysburg, Union forces defeated Confederate forces at Vicksburg, Mississippi. This victory gave them control of the Mississippi River, and it split the states of the Confederacy.
Union General Ulysses Grant had been trying to seize Vicksburg for several months. It was not easy. Vicksburg lay on the east side of the Mississippi River. It was built high above the water on a rocky cliff. As the river flowed past Vicksburg, it turned in sharply at the base of the cliff and then continued on to the Gulf of Mexico. The Confederates had placed cannon all along the sharp turn in the river. Enemy boats sailing past made easy targets.
General Grant began the campaign for Vicksburg in late 1862. His army was west of the Mississippi River. He needed to get to the other side to attack the city. First, Grant planned to cross the river into northern Mississippi State. Then he would march south to Vicksburg. He crossed the river, but Confederate forces destroyed his transportation and supply lines. He withdrew. Early in 1863, he tried again.
This time, he planned to sail his men past Vicksburg. They would cross the river a little downstream, turn and attack. Grant moved 40,000 men to a point 10 kilometers from Vicksburg. He told the men to put down their guns and take up digging tools. They would build a canal to carry them past the turn in the river, past the Confederate cannon.
For weeks, the Union soldiers worked on the canal. They dug through mud and wet clay. Many died of disease. After more than a month of digging, engineers decided that the canal would not work. Grant ordered the men to build another canal. Then another. They did not work either. By this time, the Union soldiers had become experts at digging canals. One of them said, "As soon as the canals at Vicksburg are finished, we are going to cut a canal across the upper part of Florida. We will cut that state off from the Confederacy and give it to the alligators."
Finally, in April 1863, Grant gave up all ideas of getting past Vicksburg without a fight. He decided to march most of his men down the west side of the river to a steamboat landing 30 kilometers below Vicksburg. He would send his Navy boats past the city at night and hope for the best. It took 3 weeks for Grant's men to reach the steamboat landing. The roads were very rough. In many places, they were covered with water. Engineers had to cut trees and cover the muddy roads with logs so wagons would not sink. They had to build bridges over the many streams.
On the night of April 16th, the Union Navy made its run past Vicksburg. 8 gunboats and 3 empty troop boats floated down the dark river. Their engines were silent. The Confederates, however, had built fires along the river. They saw the Union boats and began to shoot. They hit most of the boats, but destroyed only one. The damaged boats reached safety below the city. On the last day of April, the Union troop boats began carrying soldiers to the east side of the river. About 23,000 men crossed. Right away, they faced a force of 8,000 Confederate soldiers. They drove the Confederates back.
Grant then ordered the rest of his army to cross to the east side of the river. Some of his officers protested. They said it would be impossible to get supplies to a large army east of the river. Grant was not worried about supplies. He said the men should bring only coffee, hard bread, and salt. Anything else could be taken from the farmers of Mississippi. Their homes, he said, were full of food.
Grant decided not to throw his men against the strong defenses around Vicksburg immediately. Instead, he marched them east toward Jackson, the state capital. Jackson was the supply base for the Confederate Army defending Vicksburg. Grant wanted to cut the supply lines between the two cities. He also wanted to prevent the soldiers in Jackson from joining the soldiers in Vicksburg. Grant captured Jackson easily. He left some troops to destroy enemy supplies. He took the remaining troops and turned back toward Vicksburg.
Grant attacked Vicksburg several times. Each time, his troops were thrown back. The city's defenses were too strong. Grant then decided to surround the city and wait until its food was gone. That, he thought, would make the Confederates surrender. Grant closed in with men and artillery. As one soldier wrote, "The circle of Union forces around the city was so tight that a cat could not have crept out without being discovered. Nothing could get out. Nothing could get in." Weeks passed. The Union army shelled the city. The Confederate army answered from time to time. Food supplies dropped. There was little to eat except cornbread and the meat of mules. Some people caught rats and ate them.
Finally, the Confederate commander, General John Pemberton, decided the situation was hopeless. He sent word to Grant that he was ready to discuss surrender. The two commanders met under a white flag of truce. Grant demanded unconditional surrender. Pemberton rejected the demand. Pemberton's men were to be prisoners. That was a fact. But Pemberton wanted them released immediately on parole. He told Grant that his men would promise to stay out of the war if permitted to return to their homes. If not, he said, they would continue to fight.
Grant agreed to let the Confederate soldiers go home. He and Pemberton signed the surrender agreement on July 4th. The siege of Vicksburg had lasted 47 days. Never had a Union army won such a victory. Grant had taken 30,000 Confederate soldiers out of the war. He had captured 60,000 guns and 170 cannon. These were serious losses for the Confederacy. It already was low on manpower and weapons, but an even greater loss was the control of the Mississippi River. With Vicksburg in Union hands, the North could control the whole length of the river, and the Confederacy was split badly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.